It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
I criticize colleges a lot on this program. That doesn't mean I'm against colleges. At least I'm not against what their original intention was. Their original intention was to teach people how to think, not to teach people what to think. I do have 2 degrees. I'm not anti-college. I'm very concerned about the direction of colleges today. And places like UCLA don't seem to be very acquainted with their original mission of teaching people how to think. Although occasionally you'll get a student-led group that's conservative and wants to bring legitimate debate, not name-calling, not mudslinging, not shouting people down, but debate, hearing another point of view. Well, as it happened, more than 150 demonstrators protested an event with the United States Department of Homeland Security's head lawyer at the UCLA School of Law on Tuesday. According to the Daily Bruin, the UCLA Federalist Society, a chapter of the National Conservative Legal Organization, hosted James Percival, general counsel of the DHS, for an event called Inside DHS, a conversation with General Counsel. Isn't that a nice word? Conversation. That's what the left is always saying. We need to have a conversation. They don't mean that for a minute. They mean you need to sit down, shut up, and listen to them lecture you. That's their conversation. But anyway, back to this report. About 70 people, including protesters, attended the event, about 50 of whom walked out after the moderator said he would ask only Percival pre-screened questions. In other words, you can't just scream fascist. You have to actually ask something related to what he was talking about. Well, about 150 demonstrators, including those who walked out of the event, protested outside the law school. They chanted, "No ICE, no KKK, no fascist, USA. Well, the UCLA Law School responded. Now, this sounds good when you first hear it, but just hold on. Let me read it first. UCLA law is committed to free speech and academic freedom, including perspectives that may be controversial or deeply contested. This student-organized event, which proceeded to its conclusion, was one instance of these principles. The law school worked with the Office of Campus and Community Safety in advance to support the event and uphold the university's commitment to the free exchange of ideas." Are you noticing that nothing in there condemns the interruptions? You catching this? They supported both the event and the disruptions as the free exchange of ideas. Free exchange of ideas. That sounds just great. Commitment to free speech, even controversial ideas. My friends, the only thing unusual or controversial these days on a college campus is the conservative view. You barely hear it, and when you do, people try to interrupt it. This is a viewpoint the students seldom hear. That was why the DHS speaker was invited. That was the only free speech to protect. But it's not being protected when people in the audience are holding up smug signs, making catcalls, organizing walkouts. Interrupting free speech is not free speech. What part of that do people not understand? We need to see some of these law professors say, okay, this isn't even a student-sponsored event. I'm just going to invite a conservative to speak to my class. I invited this speaker. If you don't like what he has to say, tough. Suck it up. Tomorrow we'll bring in a speaker with a different point of view, and you can hear both sides. How do you expect to become lawyers if you can't handle hearing two sides to an issue? And by the way, any of my students who get up and walk out are going to be flunked from my class. That would be a nice thing to hear from a professor once in a while, wouldn't it? Dream on. Most professors today encourage this kind of behavior. As a lot of you know, for many years, I toured college campuses across the country, and one of the things I did was outdoor open-air evangelism, where I would get up in the free speech area, a free speech area that was sponsored by the Christian Club, and I would take questions. I would do it for a couple of hours. My voice is so loud that often I was able to go without a microphone, but some of the students preferred a microphone. And one time when I was out at Fresno, I was connected to a mic, wireless mic, and there was a speaker. And one of the student leaders of the club that supported me noticed a student turning the speaker off in the middle of me talking. He went up and confronted him, and the student said, "My professor just came by and told me to turn that mic off." And he said, "Well, you can't do that, buddy, because we reserve this time." A professor told them to turn it off. If there's one thing every college professor should be about, it's free speech, not indoctrination. But when you come out and you speak and it goes against the narrative, they tell a student to turn you off. Well, I shouldn't complain too much. All that ever happened to me back when I used to speak at universities was an occasional turned off mic, sometimes some hothead shouting at me. Charlie Kirk was murdered on a college campus. By the way, did you know that only a few months before Kirk was shot, Southern Poverty Law Center put Turning Point on their watch list and accused Charlie of hate? And what was the assassin on record as saying? This was a note he wrote to his lover. "Some hate is not negotiable." Southern Poverty Law Center calls it hate. Some psychopath reads the word hate, goes out and shoots Charlie Kirk, thinking he's doing some holy mission. Well, now the spotlight is on the Southern Poverty Law Center itself. Southern Poverty Law Center makes itself out as the watchdog of hate groups and racism, but it tries to conflate those who protest abortion or have a different view of LGBTQ or who have a strong view of the Bible. It portrays those people as being like the Nazis and the KKK. And yet, truth be told, the Nazis and the KKK are not really very popular anymore. They were bigger at one time in our history. We have a very sad history, but a lot of this is going away. That's good news, right? Well, not for the Southern Poverty Law Center. You see, apparently, they need to justify their existence if they are to stay in power and make a living at what they do. If Nazis and KKK are not truly a threat anymore, it becomes a supply and demand problem. Well, how do you fix supply and demand? You create more supply. So one solution, of course, as we just said, is to accuse people of hate and racism who are not really guilty, like Turning Point, or anyone else who simply holds a different point of view, a view that's not woke or politically correct. However, an even more disturbing solution broke in the news last week. In the name of paying informants from within the ranks of the Nazis, Southern Poverty Law Center has actually stoked the flame. They are accused by the DOJ of financing and instigating the very hatred they claim to be against. It's like somebody breaking your window and then visiting you a week later, offering to repair the window for money. Listen to this. I'm reading now from the New York Post. The Southern Poverty Law Center is accused of funneling millions of dollars to at least 8 leaders and members of hate groups, including a Ku Klux Klan imperial wizard and a fundraiser for a neo-Nazi group to act as informants. Now, the DOJ feels the word informant is kind of a title and a cover-up for what's truly going on. This piece goes on. They were charged by the Department of Justice with wire fraud, bank fraud, and money laundering conspiracy for supposedly hiding from donors the fact that it handed out more than $3 million over almost a decade to field sources whose job was to infiltrate violent extremist groups. The field sources, or EFs, as they're nicknamed, were secretly paid by SPLC between 2014 and 2023, according to the DOJ. Liora Rez, the founder of Stop Antisemitism, said that SPLC's work fighting antisemitism appeared to have fallen off in recent years. Well, yeah, people aren't trying to protect the Jews anymore. They're fair game anyway. He was infuriated by the allegations, and he said, "It's unimaginable to us that a civil rights group would gin up fake bigotry in order to solicit donations from concerned Americans." If this is what the SPLC did, it is shameful and outrageous. Now, among the informants identified but not named in the indictment is an Imperial Wizard of the United Clans of America, a hate group the SPLC claimed in a 2013 article was responsible for the 1963 Street Baptist Church bombing that killed four young girls. One informant was part of an online leadership chat group organizing the 2017 Unite the Right white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, and ended up posting racist comments at SPLC's instigation while also coordinating rides for participants. It goes on and on. Again, these people are technically being paid as informants, but they're raising funds for these organizations and doing all kinds of other things. Now, some people think that this investigation was started by the Trump administration. Believe it or not, the DOJ under Biden at first opened up this case, started looking into it, and it mysteriously closed without explanation. Why? Well, of course, Biden was a blithering, incompetent idiot, so I suppose that had something to do with it. But since others at that time were truly running the country, they did know what they were doing, so this was also nefarious evil. Now, I'm watching this on the news and finding myself wondering how long it would take for Democrats who love the Southern Poverty Law Center to blame this whole thing on Donald Trump. Within seconds of wondering out loud with my wife as we watch the news, and I mean literal seconds, Charles Schumer was on TV giving a speech. He said, "I just want to say a quick word about the deeply disturbing charges the Justice Department." Now, see, it's the charges, the fact that they're charging. That's what's deeply disturbing. "The deeply disturbing charges the Justice Department has brought against the Southern Poverty Law Center. These charges should send a chill down the spine of every American who cares about free expression and the rule of law in the Justice Department. It should send a chill down the spine of every American who cares about civil liberties and the fight." You'd think he'd say, okay, let's look into that. If these charges are true, this truth should send chills. But no, that's not what he said. He went on to say that Trump has turned the Department of Justice into the Department of Vengeance. That's Schumer's interpretation. Good one, Schumer. Right on schedule, as always. And of course, the mainstream media carries their water. Sure, you'll hear criticism of SPLC from conservative outlets like the New York Post or Fox News, but you're hearing excuses for them from PBS, CBS, CNN, and the like. Well, don't be too hard on them. The press has been busy protesting Trump's attendance at the White House press dinner and lamenting the fact that the freedom of the press is in jeopardy under this president. We've been hearing that now throughout the 4 years of his first term, throughout the first 2 years of his second term. All the leftist press does is bash Trump. That's all they do. How many of them are in jail? Ask an Iranian immigrant how long journalists in Iran who criticize the Ayatollah stayed alive. The left loves to talk about free speech when protecting their own point of view, but when somebody actually investigates fraud, they come up with things like the Nick Shirley Act to pass a law against inexperienced journalism. Inexperienced being defined as those who don't share our viewpoint. And they sure were a responsible press during those 4 years of covering Biden. Remember Morning Joe? "Now listen to me carefully. This version of Biden is the best version of Biden." Yeah, the best. The guy could barely walk 3 steps or string 1 sentence together. So you'll pardon me if I refuse to listen to any sanctimonious, self-righteous lectures about journalistic integrity from these compromised clowns. They can talk about the First Amendment all they want, but today's media and today's Democrat Party would not know the First Amendment from a chewing gum wrapper. Now, that doesn't mean I'm saying there shouldn't be some limits to free speech. For example, it should stop at our oceans. What I mean is politicians who oppose the president while free to speak their mind at home, and they should be free to speak their mind, should keep their big, stupid mouths shut while in another country. I'm not suggesting they should be censored or scripted or dishonest if while they're there for another reason a reporter asks them how they feel about something. That's not what I'm talking about. But giving a speech is another matter. Proactively slamming our commander-in-chief, that's different, and that's disgusting, which probably explains why we heard it from one of the most disgusting governors our country has ever known, Tim Walz.
We've got a feeble-minded, trigger-happy president who plunged us into a war where no threat was present, with no clear objectives and no exit plan. We need to call that what it is. That's fascism. Or at least it's fascist curious, as they would be.
Ah, shut up!
My friends, if you're wondering why the Iranians keep dragging on the peace talks, this is why. They're thinking to themselves, let's just wait for the midterms. They're only a few months away. Maybe the Democrats will take back Congress. And essentially, for all intents and purposes, Trump will be out of power. Maybe they'll even remove him and impeach him. Then we'll have these spineless, feckless, idiot Democrats in power instead, and they'll let us do whatever we want, because they always have in the past. Now, I should say, Governor Elmer Fudd of Minnesota was not the only one criticizing Trump overseas. Senator Chris Murphy did it as well, and has another claim to fame in addition this week. A tweet put out by an Ali Vaez saying, and I quote, "At least 26 Iranian Shadow Fleet vessels bypass U.S. blockade," quote unquote. Now, that wasn't true. It was a false report, or fake news, as some call it. But thinking it was true, Murphy wrote, "Awesome." Well, he came under a lot of criticism, so he's since tried to walk it back. He says he was just being sarcastic. Sarcastic. Yeah. Was he also being sarcastic in Spain, giving that speech at the same time as Tim Walz? And how about 2022, when he said he thought we should take the Iran Revolutionary Guard off the terror watch list? It gets better. In 2020, according to the Washington Free Beacon, he admitted secretly meeting with the Iranian foreign minister. Ladies and gentlemen, our president back in 2020 was Donald Trump, not Chris Murphy. And our president today is Donald Trump. He's our duly elected president, put into power by a majority of the voters. And yet the very people who whine and claim that Trump's trying to overturn democracy try to overturn the election result at every corner. It was Trump that they elected. Not Schumer, not Murphy, not Elmer Fudd of Minnesota, but Trump. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand, or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Of course, the biggest breaking news is the assassination attempt last night at the Washington Press Corps dinner or banquet or gala or whatever they were trying to call it. Didn't really happen a whole lot because it got interrupted right away. Here to talk about this with me and some other news, say hello to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to not even talk about anything else but this whole situation yet again. I mean, this is the fifth attempt. The fifth one. I mean, yes, this is the third one where Trump was actually in person, but there was two other times.
There was a guy that tried to break in Mar-a-Lago, yep. And on Fox News, I heard them talking about another one.
That's
not
correct.
Clear on where that one was, but and who knows how many there have been that just have never even come to our attention.
Right, exactly. There could have been plenty of other ones where they were planned. Like, I know last hour, Amy Riker reported saying there was no assassination attempts on Biden. There were planned ones, but they never came into fruition. That was the thing, and so.
Probably the assassination. And looked at his walking around and mumbling and said, you know what? It's really not necessary.
Well, one of them.
He's already dead.
If you remember, there was one where it was planned out. He was going to be at a rally. So the guy went to the venue, but then he turned out he went to the wrong venue the entire time. But his information got leaked on social media.
Well,
so therefore,
I'm sure the Easter Bunny would have tackled him like a good Secret Service if he'd been there.
Probably. Okay, so let's get back down to this actual serious situation. So yes, there was another assassination attempt last night at the White House correspondent dinner. They have announced who it was. He is in custody. Here's the thing about this whole situation. Number one, I don't want to name this guy personally.
I know. I don't like it when they give the names either, because that's what they're trying to do, make a name for themselves.
Absolutely. They want that media attention. And
they think they're heroes.
Yes.
The guy thinks he tried to assassinate Hitler.
True. And again, that was what I was going to say. There's going to be plenty of blame to go around. I think for me personally, 75% of this blame goes to Democrats and
liberals. You keep calling people evil. It's like I was saying last segment about Charlie Kirk with Southern Poverty Law Center calling him hateful. So the guy goes out and what does he write in his note? You can't negotiate with hate.
Exactly, yes. So because of that, there's a lot of sick people out there. They are very influential with words. We see this with everything in society. I mean, one of the big ones to me that's off the top of my head are cult groups. They're able to brainwash you and think, wow, this is the way of my life I should join in.
Yeah, and the Democrats will always put out this mealy mouth. We renounce the violence. They'll always go out of their way to say it's on both sides. I'm sorry. Right now, it's not on both sides. It's coming from the left. It's coming from the Democrats. We can't outlaw stupid, irresponsible statements like calling somebody Hitler. We can shame the people. We can vote them out. But what we can do is when some guy goes on a radio podcast and says that the assassination of an insurance salesman was justified and says that he wants to go out on the streets of New York and make the street bloody with landlords, that can be outlawed, because that's not just speech. That is literally inciting people to violence. And as it's been well demonstrated, there's plenty of psychopaths that are listening that'll actually go out and do that.
Right. And our media is just celebrating this guy instead. Like, they're making a movie about the guy and his actions instead of, you know, vilifying him.
And that guy Piker that does the podcasting that's calling for, he's the guy that said that in Hamas it was incidental that the Israeli women were raped. He didn't really care. He's given a platform by the New York Times, mm-hmm. This guy. And a major candidate for Senate in Michigan on the Democrat side is campaigning with this character.
And all we could do is just keep crying out hypocrisy over and over and over. But unfortunately, there's got
to
be.
Well, that guy ought to be arrested because he's literally incited and justified violence.
Right. Now, if we can go back to this situation. So there's different things that are coming out about how the guy even got into the building in the first place.
Well, the security was abysmal.
Yeah.
The ballroom itself was well guarded. But there are reporters saying that people that went to the dinner saying that all they did was check their ticket at the door.
Yep. Yep.
Only a paper ticket. They barely glance at it. Anybody can mimeograph a paper ticket.
Totally. Absolutely. I was going to mention that Lydia Moynihan, I think is how you pronounce it. She's a financial correspondent for the New York Post. She tweeted out and reported, to enter the Washington Hilton, where WHCD or the White House Correspondent Dinner is hosted, you only need to show an invite to a party, something that is easy to obtain and easy to forge. You only go through security to enter the actual dinner itself.
And yet they had all kinds of different cocktail parties where the people coming to the dinner were already assembling. Many of them were with the politicians. Mm-hmm. And anybody, because the hotel was still open, people were still there as guests.
Right.
Exactly. Like this creep was. Anybody could have gone. If this guy had decided to try to pull this off an hour before, this would have been a whole different news story.
There was another really, really dark tweet that came out where there was a reporter who said that she caught food poisoning the night before the corresponding dinner. So she stayed in her hotel room. And my goodness, the scare that must have gone over her body about this whole situation, hearing the bane up in her room too.
Yeah.
I can only imagine. So.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that's quite interesting is that the shooter himself, he has a sister who's a journalist, they come to figure out, and she's part of a far left organization. So
no. Far left? No.
I know. But they think that's how he got the actual invitation or the paper invitation. It wasn't forged. He just actually took her invitation. But again, the question becomes, how did he get inside with all those weapons? We got knife, we got a bomb vest possibly.
Well, he didn't get into the ballroom, but hey, yeah. How did he get inside? Because he probably just walked from his hotel room and walked the stairs into the lobby.
They did say he had a small handgun, but there was also reports saying that
there was also a shotgun and several knives.
That's what it was, yeah. It says, according to reports coming from the California Post, the shooter appeared to assemble a long object, end quote, what we now know as the actual weapon, the shotgun weapon.
Well, I'll tell you how he did it. He took the train over, and yes. You don't have your bags checked on a train. Apparently.
No, you don't.
Then he checked into the hotel. They didn't check for his bags. And then he just came down from his hotel room and just walked out to the lobby. Mm-hmm. Now, he did his bold action when he rushed the security at the metal detector gate. But by that time, he was already armed.
Exactly, yeah. And then the other thing I do want to mention is some of the stuff that was going on during that time, too. I don't know if you heard about this. There were protesters right outside the Washington Hilton, including one protester. And this is actually verified photo evidence of a protester that said on her sign, quote, death to all inside. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, death to the Trump administration and death to any reporter that'll hobnob with the Trump administration,
exactly.
Apparently.
And keep in mind, I just mentioned that there's a reporter who's against Trump. There's reporters who actually criticize Trump that actually went to this. And yet you're saying, no, you should still.
Now, there was going to be some. This was going to be a whole different evening. A lot of them were going to hold up little signs, and there was a planned walkout amongst some of them. It was going to be a whole different evening. But Trump was willing to come. He was going to get up there. He was going to roast them. It is interesting that the president, the vice president, the speaker of the house, that's the line of succession to the presidency, almost the entire cabinet. Boy, if that guy had just walked in there with a bomb instead of a gun,
mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of insane. They won't even let the president and vice president fly in the same plane for
right.
that reason. Why are they all together? And yet this isn't the only time it happens. At the State of the Union address, you have every single person in Congress and the cabinet and the entire Supreme Court are there.
Mm-hmm. And going back to your old protesting thing, we wouldn't be surprised if that was going to be happening in the first place. I'm talking about the one about the walkout.
Oh, no. That wouldn't have surprised us, and Trump would have made jest of it, and
yeah.
it would have ended up being a fun evening, actually.
Yeah, exactly. It would have
it just didn't, and you heard that Trump wanted to continue with it anyway.
You did? Oh, he did.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, he insists. He says, let's go back. Let's just keep going. The Secret Service finally talked him into not going. Everybody around pleaded. And originally, they got it. I was watching this live in real time on CNN, unfortunately. They were the ones showing it live. The reporters are just bashing Trump all the way up to when they suddenly heard a gunshot, and then the whole evening changed. But yeah, they even got up and announced that it was going to continue because the president wanted it to, and then they decided not to because the president was talked out of it. I was disappointed. I would have actually liked to see them continue it, although
really?
The Secret Service was very wise to insist that they didn't continue. They would have been wiser to have some better security outside
sure.
the hotel doors, however.
That's for sure.
However, again, they're being underfunded right now. They're on that list of the partial government shutdown. You would think this would wake up the Democrats. You would think people would slow down their rhetoric. maybe for a day or two, but I'm not really holding my breath, Brendan, that any of those things are going
to
happen.
And then going back to what you were saying about the Secret Service, that was going to be my 25% blame. I mean, I'm watching this video, but as soon as the gunshot is going off, the security detail that's there, who are they going after first? They quickly pulled J.D. Vance before Donald Trump. And I will give credit.
Well, I think they each have their own secret security. So yes, maybe Vance has just moved a little quicker. Yeah,
I'm not sure entirely. All I know is that the first Trump security guy, he does a quick little power walk. He doesn't run or anything. And then he's searching left and right before he does any action of diving on top of the president.
Yeah.
I'm surprised by that. My first reaction, if I'm a Secret Service specifically for Donald Trump, is dive on the president to make sure everything is okay, because that is a gunshot. I can clearly tell right away.
Well, the ones that were around them and surrounded them and got them out, very much eventually, like Butler, those people really do their job. It's the outer security that seems to be the problem. And one thing that perplexes me, they said there was an open exchange of gunshot, and yet the attempted shooter was not shot himself. They finally tackled him.
Right.
Now, Brendan, help me understand, how does anybody on the, if ever there's a crack shot, it's a Secret Service agent, how do they shoot at this guy and miss several times? That I just don't get.
I will never get either. Now, to be fair, I'm the one to speak, because when it comes to me shooting a handgun, good luck. My accuracy is horrendous on that
thing. I couldn't shoot my way out of a wet bag, but then I'm not joining the Secret Service.
No, either. I understand that. Whoever is the Secret Service should have a very good sharpshooter on their team.
Sure. There was a great sharpshooter there in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
He took that guy out immediately. It may be that there were other people in the room. They
Possibly.
Were trying to be careful. They were trying to modify their shots a little bit. I guess that's the only thing that might make sense.
I'm not going to brag too much on the air about this, but the fact that I can do pretty well with a shotgun or a longer range weapon, that I can do, but a handgun, for some reason, it's the kickback that always gets me, because I'm not used to having such a small little firing power between it. And then,
well, I wouldn't do good on either, and I'm not all that great with a rubber band either. So
there's this thing when I used to play called paper football, where you folded a paper so much it turned into a football and it was very thick. Couldn't aim that thing for a field goal plus any time of the week. Going back to, again, some of the things that we were talking about earlier about this assassination attempt. Again, I wanted to talk about specifically, I'm trying to remember, you made a good point and I wanted to reiterate it and then add my own perspective on the whole situation, but I can't remember now. Oh, the funding. That's it. You're talking about the funding for the Secret Service.
Yeah,
I'm not surprised it's been defunded. These past assassination attempts don't give me the best vote of confidence for Secret Service.
Yeah, but you don't defund them. You fund them more and hope that they get better, right?
If anything, again, this weighs on the, what do they call, the leader or the department?
Well, the woman leader that was in charge back during Pennsylvania, they've gotten rid of her.
I know.
She was a nightmare. I don't know who the leader is now. And again, it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback. I will say that within the room where they are, the security was top notch, but I don't know if they thought it was the hotel's job to do security or the local police. I don't know what, but as always, this is three times. And then the second time on the golf course, the guy made it all the way to the bushes and was about to shoot the president. And it just so happened that one of the Secret Service guys with him on the golf cart noticed him.
I know.
So they do great in the moment, but what are they doing to stop this from happening in the first
place?
That's
what I'm talking about. So whoever is the leader of the Secret Service needs to be held accountable. And I will be not surprised if that accountability comes about tomorrow in front of Congress again.
Well, I've already heard that they're being brought before Congress tomorrow.
Exactly.
As well they should.
Yeah, and if they get let go again, I'm not surprised again too.
But I hope some of them say, you know what, maybe we could do a better job if we were fully funded. I think that could be part of it.
Possibly. And now, one last question I have. I basically finished with most of my points. Does Trump appoint these leaders by any chance, or no?
The heads of the Secret Service?
Yeah.
I know he appoints the head of Homeland Security,
right,
and the Secret Service falls under them, but it may be a chain of command thing. I'm not really sure on where that comes from.
Because if he's in charge of appointing specifically the leader of the Secret Service, once again, this is surprising to me. He appoints certain government officials that seem to be good at first, but then, man, oh man, you start to notice.
I must say, with each assassination attempt, Trump has been very gracious and magnanimous toward the Secret Service.
I will say that
very
too.
Forgiving.
Yes, as much
for
as
all the criticism he comes up with. He's a very graceful person.
And that goes for sure with conservative pundits. I heard over and over and over again some lambasting.
Yeah, I don't
people.
Want to rake on the Secret Service. I know they're underfunded and overworked, but I do think that the outer security needs to be better. I will give them an A+ on the inner chamber security.
Right. Again, going back to the, was it Philadelphia one where he was outdoors, right? That was in Philadelphia.
It was not Philadelphia, but it was in Pennsylvania.
It was Pennsylvania, sorry.
Okay. Butler? Was it Butler, Pennsylvania? Something
I think
like
so.
That.
Anyway,
yeah.
The long story short was I was actually very. This This was even before Trump even said anything about the woman security who literally jumped in front of Trump or attacked Trump.
They did a phenomenal job. And that woman full credit.
Yeah, that woman specifically did her job the way she was supposed to and trained for.
Right.
And yet, I would say a lot of conservative pundits out there were like, why was a woman that small taking care of Trump, that huge of a guy, and blah, blah, blah.
Well, that might have been a valid question. Why was somebody that small put there? However, since that's the person that they put there, she did a very good job while she was there.
And that is a brave act for her. I mean,
absolutely.
Put yourself in those shoes. I don't know if you would do the
whatever
exact same
the reason
thing right
was
away.
For putting her there. She did her job.
Exactly.
And we've got to give her full credit.
Absolutely. All right. Well, is there anything else you wanted to add before I move on to the next subject? Or
only that I don't think the Democrats are going to change their tune.
No,
one
of course
bit.
Not.
And I do believe that if someone succeeds in assassinating Trump, today's Democrat Party will be responsible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can look at this same thing with the Louisiana shooting where a bunch of kids passed away. Immediately, what does Newsom do? Criticizes Trump, saying this is all your fault and the guns are out there. But during this assassination attempt, quiet. I don't hear a peep out of him. Not a tweet, nothing.
And if Republicans were stoking the fire and calling Obama Hitler and somebody had assassinated Obama, can you just imagine the hell that Republicans would have to pay for that?
Exactly, exactly.
It wouldn't even be anything to think about.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the California governor debate that happened, I want to say, this past Wednesday.
And Miss You're In My Shot was in that debate, wasn't
yes, she?
Yes, she
was. And let me tell you.
You are in my shot. Get out of my shot.
She did not disappoint in the debate, let me tell you. We have a lot of good material from her, but we'll talk about that when we come back to the Bob Siegel Show.
Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric.
Is it really true that there will be peace in the Middle East if we just have a two-state solution? Or are some people instead challenging Israel's right to exist at all? Is it true that Jews have no historical claim to the Holy Land and stole that land from a people called the Palestinians? Bob Siegel's latest book challenges the historical revision of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and shows how Israel's struggle may soon be the struggle of the entire world. The Holocaust Against Israel by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
I'm Dr. David Poole, president of San Diego Christian College. If you've been thinking about getting your pilot's license and a degree in aviation, come fly with us. We have a long history of producing aviation leaders. Whether your focus is on commercial, missionary, or military, we're ready to help you achieve your goals from a Christian worldview. So look us up at sdcc.edu. That's sdcc.edu. San Diego Christian College. Come fly with us.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
So this past Wednesday, we had our first governor debate, and technically it would have been, I guess,
didn't the second Didn't they try to one. Have one a month ago and yeah. they canceled it because it wasn't racially balanced or something?
No, they canceled it due to, they said, last second change of plans of some sort. But anyways, we actually had one where we had five candidates up on the board. And let me tell you, let me start off with the presentation part. Excellent. Usually what I hate the most is a lot of interrupting, clashing, talking over
They were respectful.
They were very respectful. Each person actually had their time. They shut their mic off. There was no yelling across the room.
Well, good.
Everyone had their time. I love that.
That's a victory right there.
That's a victory by itself. Number two, I love the fact everyone got equal question in equal time. Specifically,
you didn't have a moderator ginning it up for the Democrats exactly. and then giving the Republicans a hard time.
Exactly. It was straightforward. Here's a question. What are you going to do about the situation sort of thing? I love it. Thank you so much for that.
Mr. Bianco, what do you think about the fact that people think you're a fascist? So there was nothing like that.
Nothing like that. Okay. No. Thank goodness for that. So I wanted to go over some highlights of what was said and then let you know of how I felt about each position, basically. So let's start off with homelessness was one of the questions they asked.
Oh, yeah. I saw a clip of that. They were asking them to grade the governor on homelessness.
First off, I was surprised Porter didn't yell out at them. They said, so what are you going to do about homelessness and what grade? She goes, whoa. That was a follow-up question. I can't handle follow-up questions, guys. This debate's over. Yeah, shut it down.
Right.
No, instead, she said, and quote, I don't think this has been an easy problem to solve. And she went on to talk about how the...
She said she was a tough grader, too.
Yeah, she said... Yeah.
And she sure didn't sound tough with the grade she gave him.
She gave Newsom a B+.
Yeah, and didn't Hilton say something like, boy, I wish I was in your class in school.
Yes, absolutely.
Great response.
She also mentioned how the homelessness problem correlates with the cost of housing in California. I would agree on that.
It correlates with fraud. We're spending billions of dollars and then we just keep increasing the homeless.
We miss on that part too. Absolutely. So
it's like Southern Poverty Law Center, supply and demand. Exactly. The more homeless we have, the more money we ask.
It's a whole economic cycle of this whole situation. Now, she did say that she would plan to fund a homeless prevention, which again, they keep doing that every single year, it seems like, with the budget. And yet it doesn't solve the homelessness issue. In fact, we keep increasing the percentage
of
homelessness.
Maybe if you let people rebuild their burnt houses, we'll have less homelessness.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll talk about that here shortly because insurance companies got brought up too, and I'll get to that here shortly. Matt Mahan, my goodness, this guy, Matt Mahan, the San Jose mayor, every time he spoke, I was like, oh my gosh, Democrats do love you, don't you? Because he is so hypocritical with his policies that he had. He said, I built a basic dignified shelter invested in prevention, and when shelter was available, we required the people come indoors. And he added that he would hold individual jurisdiction accountability for their homelessness track record. My goodness, the homelessness in San Jose is horrendous too. I mean, the cost of living, let alone up there too, is skyrocketing.
That's Silicon Valley. I used to live up there.
Yeah, and I don't know how, because again, a very cheap one-bedroom house with one bathroom, very small, still is going to cost you about $2 million to even buy in that area. It's ridiculous how much the average price is up in that area. And I get it. He'll say, oh, it's because the industry that we're in, they get high enough pay, so therefore we can correlate with that. No, that's not how it works again. And again, you should seriously look into your budget to see how come everything is so expensive within your city and see where you're misspending your money in the first place. But nevertheless, he gave Newsom a little bit of a better grade than Porter. He gave him a B, just a straight up B instead of a B+. So keep that in mind. Xavier Becerra also highlighted the need for accountability, describing his plan as keeping people in their houses. It costs me so much more money to pick you up off the streets, provide you with the assistance and the shelter than it does to keep you in the home you've already paid for, he said. And not only that, he gave Newsom an A for effort, he says, quote, an A for effort on homelessness. What fantasy world is he living in? What fantasy world?
You know what grade I would have given Newsom? I would have said, I'm giving him an F, and let me explain. You see, F is the lowest grade I'm allowed to give.
Well, to be fair, Chad Bianco.
I'm sure they gave him an F.
Yeah, and Steve Hill, and both gave him an F, and that's absolutely fair. Now, Steve Hill had said his approach is to make homelessness illegal in California, get people into drug treatment, and improve mental health care. Well, that sounds good and dandy.
But then we have to fund that also.
Exactly. That's what I'm worried about. And And maybe he has ideas.
Well,
and
maybe
plans
if we take the millions of dollars that were designated for homeless that aren't going for homeless, we'll have some cash to
absolutely
deal
with. And maybe he might hire some administration to notice, oh, this decimal place is in the wrong area and we want to have a bigger budget deficit than the state has ever been in before. So Chad Bianco, this is quite an interesting take on the homelessness. He says California does not have a homelessness issue. It has nothing to do with homes. Instead, the blame should be on legislator not funding Prop 36 to give the assistance needed to deal with the issue, he said. He says it's more of a drug and mental health issue.
Well, that is a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm. And then lastly, Tom Steyer also gave Newsom a B. His takes were interesting, to say the least, for a billionaire. He kept saying, let me tax.
Now remember, this is the Democratic Party that says we need to get rid of all billionaires, tax the billionaires. But this billionaire is their leading candidate right now.
Yeah, and one of the candidates did ask him about, hey, so how much did you have to pay for your taxes this last tax day? And he never answered the question. Surprise, surprise. But anyways, yeah, he suggests...
Because he's found a gazillion loopholes. That's
exactly,
why.
Yeah.
And I don't begrudge him that. Just don't go around demonizing the rich when you're doing it yourself.
Absolutely. Tom Steyer instead suggested making emergency interim housing that people want to go to, as no one gets well on the street, he says, end quote. Again, sounds...
Not on California streets, anyway.
That's true. That's true. It sounds fine and dandy, but again, I question his ability as a governor. That's for sure. Moving on. Truck driver language proficiency is quite interesting.
Yeah. It's racist that the truck drivers should have to learn to read English.
Well, how about that,
Mike? Never mind if they run over some family in their car. I just don't want to do any racial profiling.
This is what you're reading the exact words of Xavier Becerra here. He said that law enforcement should not discriminate against any driver. If law enforcement was testing every driver, just the drivers who look like me, that would be racist.
How they look has nothing to do with it. They could be white and come from Sweden, but if they don't read English, they can't be a truck driver. What part of that do these morons not understand?
Yeah. And then Matt Mahan says that this should be only up to the DMV to ensure license holders meet the qualifications. We should never lower the standard that the agencies like the DMV enforce. As governor, I will also ensure that every state agency lives up to its responsibility.
Oh, it's up to the DMV? Okay. Mm-hmm. We've both been to the DMV to renew our license, right? How exactly do you take that test if you can't read English?
Exactly, right? And then not only that, how long does it take to get through the DMV to get through those tests too, as well?
Although I must say, you could probably take a class on English by the time you get to the front of the line.
That's a very good, I should have got that comedy bit there. That was really good. Now, of course, Hilton and Bianco, they were talking some sense about this whole situation. Bianco specifically stated that there are rules and laws for drivers, adding that there have been several horrific accidents that were attributed to people who did not understand English or could not comprehend the road signs.
Oh, well, yeah, sure, if you're going to bring up all that.
Yeah, exactly. And that they were supposed to be abiding by. Hilton said that licenses should not be given to those in the country illegally, citing the case of Marcus Coleman from Bakersfield, whose daughter was left disabled after a big rig driven by someone who did not speak English crashed into the car she was in. So again, using a personal story, but also using quite logical sense of thinking as well. Cost of housing. Mahan, the San Jose mayor, said that he has a blueprint to build new housing and that he's spearheaded as mayor of the city, recognizing that we in the government were getting in the way. Well, wow. Thank you for noticing that, but still, it's still expensive to buy a house in San Jose. So why hasn't that blueprint worked out for you, Mahan? Xavier Becerra proposed making the fees for building homes simpler to get more units built and lower cost of housing by increasing the number available. That solution has not worked yet still. Housing is still very expensive. People keep talking about doing this idea. It just doesn't work. Chad Bianco says he would remove the red tape imposed by the state government and that a reduction in cost for home builders would encourage them to build more. Now, I talked to Dave Stahl about this. I said, are supplies really that expensive to buy to build housing? And he goes, in California? Absolutely. Just buy some plywood and see how much it's going to cost you in order to make a simple clubhouse for that matter. And I would have to look it up, but he's probably right on that situation. Katie Porter and Xavier Becerra got into a heated confrontation about the subject. Porter saying to Becerra, all these are sounding lovely plans, but have you actually looked into the numbers? Becerra responded to Porter, telling her that it's very rich to hear from someone who hasn't actually run a government before.
Did she throw any potatoes at him when he said that?
Well, you just copied Reichert's joke too as well on that one. Now we're going to insurance companies leaving California. When asked about their plans to lower the cost of insurance, both Steve Hilton and Chad Bianco blamed the current state policies for driving companies out of California. Steyer suggested to bring back more insurance companies and homes in California needed to reduce their fire risk. This includes controlled burns, reducing dry timber, and creating more defensible space between homes and surrounding wildland areas. Once again, it all sounds fine and dandy, but again, again, I still question his financial prowess, being he's getting around loopholes and everything. It just sounds very, very shady to me, all coming from Steyer. Katie Porter and Matt Mahan also backed reducing wildlife risk and blah, blah, blah from that. Xavier Becerra said an examination of what was happening behind the scenes at insurance companies was needed to address the issue of them leaving the state. So in other words, he was saying, oh, well, they were doing some fraudulent things within our state, and so that's why we had to kick them out of the state. No. It's more the fact that, again, your cost of operating a business within the states is horrendous, and that's why everyone is leaving California. I mean, most recently, In-N-Out said, oh, we're moving our district headquarters over to a different state. Ridiculous. Like, this is...
In-N-Out has become out.
Out, exactly. This one's quite interesting, the social media restrictions. I don't agree at all with specifically Katie Porter's point of view on this situation, but basically everyone agreed, basically saying that, yes, people under 16 should not have social media accounts, or for that matter, smartphones. It just hurts them academically, and I could attest to that. I think technology, while it's very helpful these days, it could be such a hindrance on people.
A lot of the Democrats went along with something that made sense.
Yeah.
Somebody's
except for one, again, Miss Katie Porter. Yeah. She highlighted how children's usage of social media is completely different, and every kid is different. I wouldn't ban under 16. I just might consider it, at least. But I also want to recognize that as a parent, it's an opportunity for families to make choices and have conversations about technology. Well, it hasn't worked, Katie, again, because again, we have so many young kids being influenced by so many things online. And again, one of the
biggest
examples.
And they pay much more attention to that influence than their parents.
No, exactly. And one last thing to mention before we head out for the evening is the fact that we did get reports about how everything went after the debate, and nothing really changed in the polls, really. We still have a huge lead for Hilton, for sure. And good. Second place is actually now a tie between Bianco and Steyer, surprisingly.
Now we just have to hope it's a fair election.
Yeah, but how much do I believe in that? Not so much. So anyways, Bob, thank you again so much for this wonderful night of talking with you about all these important stories. We'll see you guys next week. The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the law offices of Matthew Simone.